This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original Star Trek series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good, it's good. Well, today, I thought that we'd talk about the transporter. We've talked about the tech before, but I felt like we should focus on the transporter, because McCoy seems scared of it. Well, sometimes.
He steps up when he needs to, but, you know, it's not exactly something which he enjoys doing. You know, just like my wife. I mean, yeah, she'll get on a plane when she wants to go somewhere, but she hates it. You know?
Well, I think a plane sounds a lot safer than whatever it is that a transporter does. McCoy complains a few times about scattering his atoms across the universe and Maybe he's got a good point. So we're told that the transporter works by taking your body and then it like scans it and then it takes it apart and then sends it to another place and then puts it back together.
Yes.
Now the original concept was going to show like a beam of light coming from the Enterprise, kind of like an abduction ray on other you know, like on a UFO in a regular science fiction show. Which would kind of, I would like better, I think. It would make me more comfortable with the transporter.
So, like, would they show, like, an exterior of the Enterprise with the beam going down? Or would they just show, like, a beam coming from the sky?
I'm sure that they would switch between them.
Yeah.
Make it look like they were being shot down. Like, let's put them in photon torpedoes and shoot them down on the surface.
Yeah, I'm really glad that they didn't do that. Because then we would have spent how many hours of our lives looking at shots of the Enterprise with little beams of light coming out of them.
That's why Roddenberry said, no, just have them disappear from one place and reappear another place.
That's good.
Because the whole point is to save money. Because the alternative would be to land a shuttle or land the whole ship.
Yes.
Which would have been not cost effective.
Mm-mm. Or time effective. Editing.
Oh, definitely.
Editing.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Like, imagine how short episodes of Power Rangers would be if their Zords just kind of appeared and then were already connected together, as opposed to let's yell out our Zords' names and then they all come and they come from the volcano or wherever they came from and then they run towards you and then you fight with them separate and then you decide to put them together.
Is that what happens in Power Rangers?
Yeah, and it's the same shot every time.
I am so sad that I'm slightly too old to have watched Power Rangers now.
You're just right too old.
Aw. That sounds so awesome, though.
But half of every episode was the same shots, like reused stock footage. Like the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what Star Trek would have been.
Yes.
You know, a good 20 minutes. Let's get back to the ship. And then a light would come down and then they'd get sucked up, I guess. So the question that I have is, so is it, it's moving the matter? Like it's taking you apart and then putting you back together somewhere else? Or is it rebuilding you from entirely new matter?
Well, I mean, the fact that lots of times there's beamings from, like, a ship to a site makes me think that, you know, they are transporting the matter. Because, I mean, when you start going from a transporter to a transporter, then you get into some weird stuff where it's like, are they just sending the data from one transporting system to another transporting system? In which case, sort of the theory of, you know, like, they destroy you, send the data and create a new you on the other end, you know, that makes a lot more sense. But the fact that you can beam to places which don't have transporters available or whatever makes me think that they actually are sending the matter.
But, like, then we get transporter accidents.
Yeah.
Which we don't have too many of in the original series. We do get Kirk split into two people, which is part of, and a dog and a couple things. So where does that extra matter come from? So we beam up the guy, he contaminates the transporter, Kirk beams up, and then Kirk beams up again. Where did the matter for that other Kirk come from? If they're not recreating you every time that you step onto a transporter.
Well, but okay. So every time that happened, those new things were created in the transporter, right? Like, he didn't, like, beam from the planet, from the ship down to the planet and have two Kirks end up down on the planet. So, and we've also kind of established in some stuff, which is really problematic, in Next Generation that, like, you can store your patterns in the pattern buffer, right? So, to me, it seems quite possible to create multiple versions of people.
Yeah, like, oh, Harry Kim died.
Just make a new one.
Let's make a new one. We've got all this information right here.
Which makes you wonder why they don't do that all the time, why they don't store, and have, like, a backup, I mean, just like people do with their operating systems and stuff.
Exactly. I've got, what if I get sick? So I've got a healthy me.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they could write this away just by saying, well, it just takes so much information that we can't keep all of them around.
Right.
The buffer has to get wiped. I'm sure that, I think they've said that on episodes before.
Yeah.
But then we get crazy episodes like the one where Deep Space Nine, where they can't materialize like Kira and Sisko and them, so they put them in the holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that adds a whole new level of issues. So then they're like, patterns are running around the holodeck.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't they rematerialize them? I don't know.
It's, I mean, obviously it's one of those things where, just like the creation of the transporter in the first place, it's a plot device. It's a storytelling device. So the writers have used it as that, in which case, it's a very versatile tool and, gets people out of a lot of jams and it's very Roddenberry-esque and everything. But yeah, in terms of consistency inside the universe, it's very problematic. And I mean, it really does sort of, I mean, they need to like write in limits, because once you start going down that path, it really does sort of become a thing like, why can't you just create, if someone dies, you could just create a new one. Now you could say, well, that's not the same person. It's just another guy. But on Voyager, that could really be helpful, seeing as how you have a finite number of people, or even on the original series where you're out in deep space. If the captain dies, maybe keep your like department heads in storage, make them sign waivers and be like, I mean, that could be a whole episode right there, with the ethics of that and everything. I don't want my, you can have some guy who's like, I don't want to have my pattern stored in there in case I die, I don't know. Yeah,
which is kind of what I want to get into, the ethics of the possible differences.
Yeah.
So the first one that I'd like to talk about is, so this is not really ethics, but just kind of a discussion we can have. So we take somebody apart and we rebuild them. It's impressive that it keeps like the person, like what makes us people, like with our consciousness and stuff, like what about it is like chemicals and stuff. And, what if something goes wrong? Like McCoy is absolutely right. Like anything could go wrong. One little atom, I mean, because you're being, or subatom, something gets put in the wrong place and all of a sudden you've got some kind of imbalance or something. Like just normal transportation sounds extraordinarily dangerous.
Well, it does to us, but I mean, you know, look at what we can do. I mean, we can make exact copies of, say, a Blu-ray and send them on the internet and then make another copy, you know, on another Blu-ray, and there's no generational loss or anything like that. So we're talking 200 years in the future or whatever it is. Who's to say that you can't do the same thing with a person? I mean, it is just matter. I mean, if you're saying like, well, what about the human soul and everything? I mean, it's just matter, you know? I mean, in the right place with the right chemicals and all that stuff.
But so, that's going to shake up every single belief system.
Well, you know, it is Star Trek. I mean, what?
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's the thing to me, you know, which, I mean, we kind of dealt with before, but the really big one is, it's like, are you destroying someone and creating a new person? Because mm-hmm. while it's the same to everyone around you, I mean, you're straight up dead, you know? And you're just like, I'm going to get on this transporter pad. This is great. And then you're gone, you know?
Right.
But I think the thing with, you know, them beaming to non-transporters makes me think that that's not what happens, you know?
Yeah. Just moving matter from point to point, I can understand, like an apple, you know, ooh, you know, that sounds easy enough, but like our immensely complicated systems and stuff. I'm, you know, if it came right down to it, I don't think I'd be comfortable using one.
I mean, I could see that too. And obviously that's, you know, like in Enterprise, they deal with that. People are like, no, wait, no. They're like, yeah, it's totally safe for people. And they're like, nah, I'm not getting on that thing. And then in the first episode, of course, he has to do it. And then like five episodes later, they're like, just screw it, whatever. It's fine. It's all good. It's all good. Which I don't think was what they had originally intended. But, you know, yeah, I can definitely see the hesitancy. But if it's the type of thing where it's scientifically proven and everything like that, and it's an everyday thing which is used. I mean, let's step back, you know, a few decades here, and someone's like, okay, you're going to get on a big chunk of metal, which is going to fly all the way across the world and drop you off in another country. No, it's good. It's good. I know it weighs, you know, like tons. And the idea of, like, a huge chunk of metal being able to, like, fly above the world and take people to this other place is crazy, but it's all good. It's safe. It's safe. I mean, that's a terrifying concept, you know? Hmm. And yet we do it all the time now. We don't think twice about it. Well, I mean, people do.
Some people do, like McCoy.
Right. But then you look at the stats and it's like, well, it's much safer than driving, you know?
And transporting is probably much safer than shuttles. I mean, look how many shuttles crash.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're looking at it from the 21st century perspective.
Yes.
But if you're looking at it from a 23rd century perspective, maybe it's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine after a couple hundred years of use... TOS era, you know, if we take Enterprise, you know, we've had airplanes almost as long as they've had transporters.
Yeah. And surely there are accidents here and there which occur, but...
Well, we know that there are freaking accidents.
But, you know, it doesn't seem to be a really big problem until the 24th century, when maybe there's some, you know... Maybe some of the standards have become a bit lax, and maybe there's some, you know, outside parties which are making these things, and maybe the government regulation isn't quite what it should be, and then we start getting some duds in there, you know?
Right.
Things, you know, they decide to make them out of, you know, like, plastic instead of, you know, metal or whatever, and... Then things start going horribly wrong, because it really does seem to be much more of an issue in the 24th century than it does in the 23rd century.
Yeah. I actually, when reading up on this, there's a book, I think, that explains that in the original series, they just used a transporter and they didn't really understand it. They just put it on high settings all the time.
Yeah.
So it would like blast its way through things that, that regular transporters would kind of bounce off of.
It's kind of like what's going on right now in the world of movie projection, you know? It's like everything's automated, everything's great, but everything can go terribly wrong because no one really knows what to do. Not everyone has an O'Brien. And maybe O'Brien's not even union, you know? I mean, maybe they just say O'Brien's good, but really he's not. Maybe he's just good for the Enterprise.
Maybe.
You know, it's,
I mean,
not
I
like
imagine
he,
the Enterprise
it's not
is
like
the
he's
best
Scotty.
Best.
Maybe, but it's not like he's Scotty, right?
True.
You know?
Yeah, but Scotty wasn't the transporter person. Kyle was.
Sure, but Scotty knew that thing. He was the tech, right?
Yeah. So was Geordi. Geordi ran around and kicked transporters.
Yeah.
But I just watched an episode where even Geordi was just like, I can't do this without O'Brien.
Yeah, see?
He's because, the transporter guy.
See? I mean, that's what happens. Now no one on the ship knows how the transporters work because they're just so used to them working. So when there's a problem,
everything
goes terribly wrong.
I got it. Okay, yeah. So that explains why there's more transporter accidents in the 24th century.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, second point, I'd like to go back to the whole what happens to you when you get beamed and if the old person is destroyed and made anew. It reminds me of the Prestige, spoiler alert.
Mm. Yeah, I need to see that movie again. I saw it once when it came out. I need to watch
it
again.
Yeah, I only saw it once.
Yeah.
But I recall there being a discussion about, you know, how do you know which one you're going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be the one that drowns or the one that gets all the prestige? And it's that kind of thought that also bothers me. Like, you know, what can go wrong is one thing, but this is like, even if it goes right, is it creating a duplicate of you? And we see enough transporter duplicates that it's entirely possible that that's how it really works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was reading about, I haven't gotten to the episode yet, but I was reading about the episode where Thomas Riker is made.
Yeah.
So they like beam another beam onto him to boost the signal, but then they turn it off and it just bounces back and he materializes on the surface and on the ship.
Yeah.
And it's the same person with the same wants and desires and needs that then spend the next few years, I don't know how many years, discovering their own paths and are different people now. But when they first started, they're identical people. Like, had they just turned off that beam and it not bounced back, that Riker we've seen has wants and desires and stuff. Is that person then destroyed? And that's kind of the point of the enemy with it. I mean, the point of the enemy within is, you know, needing your to balance your halves. But, you know, Kirk, evil, not evil Kirk. What is it? How do we describe him? Angry Kirk.
Yeah.
Angry Kirk wants to live. He has his own wants and desires and needs, even though he's half a man. And, you know, to make the whole person, but that kind of ethics of destroying the person does come up. Same with Tuvix, where, you know, we've combined the person.
Yeah.
And the transporter brings a lot of ethical dilemmas, but it, even in normal use, is it ethically weird to, like, maybe I'm killing myself here to show up, to have a chance of showing up down on the surface?
And I'm sure the fact that we're having this discussion, if we want to look at this in a universe, the fact that we're having this discussion, obviously, everyone else, that's probably the first thing that came up when transporters were created. And mm-hmm. there was probably some way that, you know, scientists or whatever were able to say, like, no, look, it is you. You're not dying. That's my guess.
But they could just be saying that because they wanted to get their grant.
They
it could be that everyone is being lied to throughout the entire history of Star Trek. I want to see a new episode in a post-TNG world where somebody discovers that is the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, I mean, that could be, right? But I'm just thinking at some point there would be some sort of outside, you know, third-party thing that would be like, no, this is...
Right, like a coalition of people against transporting.
Right.
Like, again, I haven't gotten to the episode, but the one where they want everybody to slow down. in Next Generation.
The one where they want everyone to slow down?
Well, they do like the warp speed limit because it's hurting the environment or something.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, the third point that I want to get to, we kind of touched on a little already, was the clones, backups, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that sounds useful, especially in the examples you gave, you know, having like the command crew on backup. But they couldn't even keep a backup of the holographic doctor for some reason. For the same reasons that we're about to have this discussion, they didn't want to be like, well, if we can just clone the doctor, then we don't need to worry about, there's no danger.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, well, if Kirk goes down to the mission and doesn't come back, he can come back. We can just rematerialize him on the transporter pad.
Yeah.
And as useful as that is, that's not, I mean, there's a lot of ethics problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you were to clone somebody who didn't have his own choices in the matter, and then you can, like, have infinite red shirts.
Yeah, I should do that. It's good.
Like, if we combine the clone, you know, Jango Fett clones.
Yeah.
If we could have the Jango Fett clones in the Star Trek universe, and then just keep them on backup and just push a button. You don't need them to have, you know, perfect endocrine systems and stuff. You just push a button. You could just compress them like a JPEG.
Right. Yeah. So whenever you run out of crew members, you just make some more.
Yeah. I need one with engineering experience. You push the engineering button and one
comes out with a red shirt, right?
Yeah.
And a tool kit. Science guy. He's got like a blue shirt on.
Yeah. And a med kit. That introduces a lot of issues.
Yeah. I don't think that Starfleet would go for that.
No, no. But if that was the case, I wonder if other cultures might.
Maybe, yeah.
Like a Cardassian or something.
And that would be a cool thing to see, you know, on a show.
Where they're like, and if yeah, that, we're just if gonna that is...
more soldiers. Like, I mean, they could totally have done that in the Jem'Hadar, you know, Dominion oh, yeah. War. Just Jem'Hadar. Like start creating Jem'Hadars, you know, from transporters.
I think that if it was possible in the Star Trek universe, the people would do it would be the Borg.
Yeah, yeah, the Borg would do it, yeah, for sure.
And they would have the bandwidth.
Yeah.
You know, we can argue all day about, you know, Federation computers and stuff, but we're talking the collective minds of, you know, entire civilizations. I imagine that they could store the pattern buffer of a drone.
Yeah, and the fact that the Borg don't do it makes it seem like it's impossible.
Yes, because Borg don't care about ethics.
For whatever reason, yeah. I mean, even though there's evidence to suggest that it would be possible, for whatever reason, it must not be, you know. I mean, right. There's plenty of things in science where I'm like, well, why don't they just do this? And they're like, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, why not? And they're like, because you want me to explain this whole thing to you?
Because no, the writer of the universe says yeah. We can't. The show writer.
Right. Yeah. But I'm talking about even in real world science, you know?
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anything is better than, I wanted to close with a recap of a short story of Stephen King's that always stuck with me. And it was creepy when I was Googling. I was like, I need to remember the title of this. So I typed in Stephen King short story. And the first suggestion was The Jaunt. And I'm like, yep, that's the one. So Google knew what I was searching for. But I had been searching for like transporters and stuff. I don't know if they sort by that or just by popularity. Because that was creepy. But it's Stephen King. I expect it to be creepy. But anyway, in this story, it's a science fiction story. We've got the man is able to travel long distances instantaneously, called the jaunt. And basically, they knock everybody out and like slide you through a portal, and then you slide out the other end. And the scientist who discovered it was testing it with mice, and every time that he put a mouse in, it'd come out the other side and be dead. And then like the first person who went through came out the other side, and he was insane. It turns out that you spend like an eternity in there. So only when you're passed out do you come out the other end sane or alive, because you spend an eternity in this other universe. And I'm just glad that, that transporting isn't like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would be bad.
But there is like an episode where Barkley is afraid of the transporter.
Probably.
Something about consciousness.
I could see that. Yeah. And that seems like a Barkley thing to do.
Yeah. I could see him yelling about how it's an eternity in there. It's longer than you think.
Yeah.
It's just, that's just a creepy story from Skeleton Crew, if you people want to read it. And I believe that it was originally published in the Twilight Zone magazine.
Oh, cool. So, since it was published in the Twilight Zone magazine, and since all of Stephen King's books take place in the same universe, does that mean that all of Stephen King's books take place in the Twilight Zone?
Not all of Stephen King's books take place in the same universe.
Really? I thought they did.
No. They're I'd say probably a third.
Oh.
Take place in the Dark Tower universe.
I thought they were all in the same town and everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of them that are in the same town.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are referenced in Dark Tower, which ties them all together. It's an interesting continuity, but a lot of his short stories are, you know, completely different. But theoretically, looking at Dark Tower, it's about every possibility being realized. So, yeah, it could be.
Hmm. Interesting.
And, I mean, it depends on if the Twilight Zone canon magazine is canon.
Yep. Yep.
Which I don't understand the Twilight Zone canon, because they're,
well, you, all the if, ways if you the think world about it end. As like a place, like, is the Twilight Zone really a thing? I mean, the big one, which I'm not sure I brought up on here, but I've definitely brought it up elsewhere, is if you got the Twilight Zone, and let's say it is canon, there's no reason to think that there's reboots or anything. You've got the Twilight Zone original series, the 80s series with Wes Craven and whatnot, and then the Ira Stephen Bear series from the aughts. You've got the movie. You know, and you can even do remakes, because why not? It's the Twilight Zone, yeah. Right? But here's the thing. Okay, if you go to Disney World, Hollywood Studios, there is a ride called the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
Yes.
Okay. And it's I've never been on it. Always been too scared. Maybe this time I'll go. I'm going.
You should.
I'm going this month. Maybe I'll go.
Okay. I'll recommend it.
You've been on it?
I have.
Is it really scary?
No.
Have you been on like how would you compare it to, let's say, Splash Mountain?
Well, ironically, I've never been on Splash Mountain. Okay. But it's like one of those rides where you you know, they just take you up and then they drop you and they pick you up and they go wee up and down and wee.
Okay, maybe I'll try it. But here's my big question. Okay, I've asked this of a million people. I have to decide. Okay, now I was in Best Buy one time, and I'm looking at the DVDs as you do, and there is a movie, a direct-to-video Disney movie with Steve Guttenberg and Kirsten yes. Dunst called Tower of Terror.
Yes.
Which is based on the ride at Disney World. Now, it doesn't say Twilight Zone, but since the Tower of Terror ride is a Twilight Zone ride, does that mean that Tower of Terror, the Kirsten Dunst, Steve Guttenberg movie, fits into Twilight Zone continuity? And if so, does that also mean that it takes place in the Stephen King universe?
Sure.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say for sure with the movie, it does take place in the Twilight Zone continuity, which is why I have to see it.
Yeah. And then, the Twilight Zone ride, it does have an intro by Rod Sterling, so it is actually... it's Rod Sterling impersonator.
Yeah.
But I would say that really places it in canon.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get into the whole thing, like, well, what about the other rides at Disney World? Are they all in the same thing? Especially if you get that Disney Parks thing that Jon Favreau and Ron Moore were doing, which it was like going to, like, basically Night at the Museum, but in Disneyland. And so does that mean that, like... The Haunted Mansion movie takes place in the Twilight Zone? Does that mean
does that mean that Star Wars and Indiana Jones take place in the Twilight Zone universe? Because they're in Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, did you see, I think it's the second episode of Rebels? They take a transport and they get on the transport. I'm like, that transport really looks like the transport from Star Tours. And then sure enough, the pilot of the transport is the Pee Wee Herman guy.
Oh, my gosh.
That's pretty good.
That's clever.
Yeah.
Well, that's neither here nor there. But
I mean, you know, we were talking about transporters, you know, transport.
Okay, transport.
It all ties
there we
in.
Go.
It all ties
all
in.
Back together.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun talking about the Twilight Zone today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, it's very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain.
Is
so,
it our birthday?
It is. It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
Eh, see then, ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Fair at this enough. Point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well thought out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud. And you can just stream from the website. You can visit trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. We can tell everybody where they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on transporters or Twilight Zone continuity. They can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the button on the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our new Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/TrekFM and on Twitter under username TrekFM. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on TrekFM doing commentary Trek Stars with John and Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrekstars.com where I do commentary Trek Stars off topic with Max and Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and you can find me commenting on threads in the Babel Conference. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks and more than 150,000 titles to choose from, new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of those famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
I have Star Trek Shadows on the Sun, which was written by Michael Jan Friedman and it's narrated by James Doohan. It says, Dr. McCoy finds himself at the center of an explosive civil war on the planet San, S-S-A-N.
Oh, okay.
And he is the only one with the power to save the woman who once broke his heart. Featuring a dramatic reading by James Doohan and enhanced with sound effects and original score, you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/TrekFM, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's another way you can keep us in orbit, and that's by supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/TrekFM, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer on our shows. Also on the site, you can find out where the donations can go, things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. That's good. I've been wanting to talk about the ethics of transporters for a while now, so it's good to have that off my chest and the fear I would have of it.
Now you can sleep well at night. You won't have those night terrors of being stuck in a transporter beam or transporting into nothingness or anything like that anymore.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
I got it all off my chest now.
Cool.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.